Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
You, my friend, are listening to the Happy Hearthstone. This show is brought to you by Doghouse Systems, who make some of the most powerful gaming PCs on the planet. And I can say from personal experience that they have awesome customer service. Use the code MMOReporter at doghousesystems.com and get a free 120GB SSD. And by Audible, the best audiobook service in existence. Seriously, if you like stories at all, you've got to check Audible out. Go to audibletrial.com/MMOReporter and get a free 1 month trial and a free audiobook. Those ads help cover our server costs for the show, but if you'd like to directly support this show and the nice people who make it, you can go to gamediplomat.com/donate and show us some love. Thank you very much. Hello and welcome to episode 75 of the Happy Hearthstone Podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time and cards. I'm your host, Josh Augustine, and this week I'm joined by Tony. Greetings, Tony.
Hi, Josh.
Any relations to Tony the Tiger?
Actually, I have no relation to Tony the Tiger, but I am a lawyer, and when I represented clients, they would say that all the time, and it was just really funny. It was always one of those,
really?
Like,
that was like your nickname?
Yeah, it was very strange. I had one guy who was, I was a public defender, so I represented people who couldn't afford lawyers, and he called me that, and it just stuck. It stuck at the jail. That was my name when I went to jail. Everyone was like, oh, Tony the Tiger, what's up? And I was like, oh, how do you know that? How do you know my name? And I was
like, who are you?
Yeah, it was very strange to be greeted by complete strangers and then have them call you Tony the Tiger.
I mean, at least Tiger, like, that's a strong name. It's not like, hey, it's Tony the Salamander or something.
Sure, sure. But it might be that, you know, like, some of the older judges would call me, all right, Tiger, I've heard enough. So.
All right, Tiger. I guess it's a little condescending when they say it that way.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry to bring up a bad memory.
No,
I don't want you to think of me as an old judge, Tony.
No.
So who are you? Why are you here? It's just customary because you just sent in an email and you just want to be on the show. Why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself?
So I already said this, but I'm a lawyer. I live in New England and I have two awesome boys. One is six and one is one. And their favorite thing to do is to get the other in trouble as quickly as possible.
Nice.
I have played Hearthstone for less than a year. I think I found it like a month after it went over to iOS.
Oh, cool.
And it was, I had been cold turkey on Magic the Gathering for about about 10 years. I'd played Magic in high school from like 1994, and then I played for about 20 years. I played for about 18 years, and then I went cold turkey, and I had that itch, the strategic card game itch, and I couldn't fill it anyway because it's hard to drive around when you have kids, and Magic tournaments are always, you know, like all day affairs, and it's just not practical. And then, you know, all the cards. And when I found Hearthstone, I was like, this is amazing. It scratches the same itch. It allows me to do it, you know, wherever I want. And I don't have to have like a closet full of, you know, useless cards.
Yeah, exactly. You just dust all those cards you don't want anymore.
Yes.
Nice. Very cool. So what do you play in Hearthstone mostly? Is it constructed? Is it arena?
I feel really guilty for saying this, but I think I have only played arena maybe four times or three times.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
This wasn't your thing?
No, I did not like arena. I think that one of the problems that I had for the longest time was it always seemed like the cards were skewed towards the newer sets. And now we know that's true. We know, I think Ben Brode or Mike Danae came out and said that they do skew them towards the newer sets. And yeah. So like when I first started playing, the Grand Tournament was the new set, and it was you know, like I would open a pack and I would get like a bunch of really crappy, expensive Inspire cards. And it always seemed like my opponent had like the 4 Flame Strike deck. And I was like, oh,
that is the most frustrating deck to go against. Cause you're just like, you're not supposed to be able to play that many.
Right.
Stop.
Right. No, I played a guy, I listened to the episode you did on Arena, and that was like, okay, I can try this. And I tried it. And the first run, so I got like, I went 5 wins and then I stopped at 3 and I lost 3 games in a row. And like one game was a game where it was like, okay, one of us is going to win this turn. It's basically whoever has any burst damage. Then the next game I lost, it was like, I just made a boneheaded error. And then the third game where I was like, you know what? I can still save this. I can try to get to 12. And the guy had 3 flame strikes. And I was like, I forget this. This is not fair.
And then you never played Arena again.
Pretty much. That was it. That was the end of Arena.
I'm glad you mentioned that episode, actually, because I've been talking with the host that did that episode, and it might be the next episode or the episode 2 episodes from now. But he's coming back on to give us an update and kind of walk us through how to win Arena with the current cards that are in there. So I'm super
that will be super helpful. All I know is that Nerubian Prophet is insane.
Yes, dude, I love that card. So good.
I keep trying to get it to work and construct it, and it won't work.
Really?
Well, you know, so like I thought that it might work in like a Handlock deck.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, it's always like just slightly underwhelming. It's never like the game tilting card.
Yeah.
And you know, like the whole thing is you want a card that replaces Molten Giant. So I tried to use Frost Giant because you hero power a lot, and it never ever worked out.
Yeah.
Like,
well, hopefully, I forget what name he used on the show, so I don't want to use his battle tag, which is the name I know him by. But hopefully he'll be on the show soon, and maybe he can give some tips.
I'll be ready.
Cool. So, but this episode is a deck battle episode. Oh, I forgot. Let's say briefly why we're happy this week. Why don't you go first, Tony?
So this weekend, I am taking my 2 boys and my wife out to a place in Western Massachusetts called Tanglewood, and it is the summer home of the Boston Symphony Orchestra, and they're having a children's performance. And Tanglewood, my wife and I, when we were poor graduate students, we went there a lot because it was cheap. It was like $12. And it's like a magical place. It's totally beautiful. The music is, I really think that Boston is one of the best symphonies in the world. And it's still super cheap, and it's outside. So if my kids decide to yell and scream, I'm not going to get dirty looks from rich old patrons.
That is always a plus. Nice. Well, that sounds really fun. I'm totally jealous.
So, Josh, why are you happy?
Dude, let me tell you why I'm happy. I'm happy because I actually just launched another podcast on the site. Yeah, it's the second podcast I'm going to have going. So they'll be going simultaneously every other week, basically updating. And this is called Game Diplomat. So my website name finally makes sense. I'm excited. and it's basically just about little indie games. So I've been writing about them on the site. Basically small, you know, $15 games that I think are awesome. That I think, you know, people would really like if they just knew about them. And so I've been writing about them on the site for a while. And I decided to just do a quick 15-minute podcast. It's just me solo on there. And I just tell you about the game and why I think you might like it, and then give away a copy of it.
Sweet.
So it's pretty simple. Yeah, I'm really excited about it, though, because it's just something I've really enjoyed writing about. I've been really playing a ton of these indie games. And I always, it's kind of like reviews, but similar to this show, I like keeping it positive and happy. And I don't really want to tell you about games that are bad and just kind of kick it while it's down, right? So I'm pretty much only doing games that I love. So I'm playing a ton of games and only picking the games that I think are awesome and covering those. So I like that every time you listen, if the game sounds at all interesting, it's a good game, right? I'm not telling you about it to tell you that it's awful.
You know, like that's one of the problems with the current, I mean, I've played video games since I was 7, and the old, like it was the equivalent of like network TV where there were like 2 or 3 choices, and all the games had to come through those 2 or 3 choices. Yeah. And now you can get, you know, you can get a game on just about any kind of device anywhere. And so just figuring out what's good is really hard.
Yeah, it really is, especially with like the indie games, because they have no marketing.
Yeah.
Like it's pretty much just word of mouth. And so that's what I'm trying to do, is just catch the games that are awesome that, you know, you might have missed.
That is a great idea.
Thanks. So the first one actually is of particular interest. It's Guild of Dungeoneering. I've mentioned it on the show once before. It's a cool indie game where the combat is done via like a simple card game. But it's a dungeon. It's like a dungeon exploring game, but you build the dungeon as you go. So it's a really fun mix of kind of strategy and card game. It's $15. It's really fun. So if you have any interest in that, just you can go to the gamediplomat.com website and check it out. And the only one person, or no, sorry, two people have now sent in. You have to answer a trivia question about the game, and if you get it right, then you're entered to win the game. And only two people have sent in guesses. So I mean, at this chance, you have like a 50-50 chance of winning.
Those are good odds.
The game. Yeah, pretty good odds. So you can check that out. Anyways, let's get back to this. This is a deck battle episode, like we said. So we do these episodes about once a month. This is where the guest host brings on their favorite deck, break it down for you, tell you what cards are in it, how it works, why they like playing it. And then we do a battle, best of three, live on the show. And the twist, of course, is always I'm using the reigning champion deck, which is the last deck someone brought on the show and won with. And the stakes have never been higher, Tony. You're competing to get in that Happy Hearthstone Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I think this one's going to do it. I feel good. I feel like I have the right cards. I also feel like, no offense to the last person that brought a deck on, Priest is in the worst spot of any class, probably in the history of Hearthstone. It's just in a terrible spot right now.
Yeah, it's been pretty rough. I've been playing this deck on the ladder a bunch and just in preparation for this, and I haven't had a great win rate. There's a lot of weaknesses that I've run into right now. And I think it's like you said, Priest just doesn't have all the right tools right now. But I'm not going down without a fight, Tony.
I'm ready.
If I can get the right play, if I can get the right early game, I'm feeling solid.
But, yeah, the curve in the Priest Dragon Priest deck is really good.
Yeah. The trick is just hitting that curve. That's what I felt like. If I come out the gates swinging, I have a really good win rate with the deck. But it's just hard to come out consistently.
Yeah,
so I'm hoping for a little lady luck tonight. But the Happy Hearthstone Hall of Fame, just remind people, if the deck beats three challengers in a row, it automatically goes into the Hall of Fame. There's only two decks in there now, the Beastmaster Hunter deck and the Warlock Demon Zoo deck. So as a reminder, I'll be playing the Dragon Priest deck as submitted by Craig in June 2016, so last month on episode 73. So if you want more info on that, you can go back to that episode and watch us play a game and hear Craig explain why it's awesome. And if you're interested in the Dragon Priest deck that Tony's going to be talking about, there's a full guide on the website, gamediplomat.com, has all the cards, substitute suggestions, and advice for how to play the deck. So let's talk about the deck. So this is a Hunter deck. It's a Yogg-Saron deck. How does it work?
So the deck originally started when I contacted you and I was like, oh, I have this really awesome N'Zoth Priest deck. And I was just playing around with all of the old gods. And yeah. I noticed that Hunter had a spot where it was missing cards. Like the two slot in Hunter used to be really good because you had Haunted Creeper and you had Knife Juggler before Knife Juggler got nerfed, even though it didn't really get nerfed all that bad. And there were just a bunch of cards that fit that two slot really well. And I had a Hunter deck and I adapted it to Standard and I started using Doomsayer. And I realized that like Doomsayer was a really great control card, but it always kind of screwed up the curve. And so I kept taking cards out and putting more control cards in. And you know, like I kept Savannah Highmane because Savannah Highmane's ridiculous. I loved Call of the Wild because Call of the Wild's also ridiculous. And it felt clunky. And when I contacted you, like, oh no, we have a Priest deck coming on, so try something else. And I started playing around with that deck. And I noticed that Savitz, who's a pro and he's a caster, he had built a Yogg-Saron deck and he had done something really crazy. He had taken all the creatures out except for four. He had one copy of Harrison Jones, one copy of Emperor Thorasan, one copy of Yogg-Saron, and one copy of King's Elec. And the whole idea was that King's Elec would act like a tutor I shouldn't use that word. So like in Magic, they used to have these cards called tutors and they would basically let you go through your deck, pick out a card and either put it in your hand or make it easily accessible. And there are no cards like that in Hearthstone, except King's Elic, but only if you take out virtually every creature in your deck. Otherwise,
yeah, so to remind people how King's Elic work, it's a 2-cost 3/2. It's hunter only, and when it has a battle cry, reveal, it's the joust effect, reveal a creature from each deck, and then if yours costs more, you get to put it in your hand.
Yes. And so what Sveet's deck would do is it would use the King's Elic as a way to search through the deck and grab a creature. And because he had the Harrison Jones was his cheapest creature, most of the time he would win the joust and put the creature or the minion in his hand. But I found that I was not good enough a player to play Sveet's deck because there are a lot of one-ofs, and by having the King's Elic have 3 possible targets, there were some times when I would lose a joust, and it was just brutal because, you know, now I have a Bloodfriend Raptor, and I have no creatures.
Yeah.
Or no minions.
No way to get creatures.
Right. So what I ended up doing was, to make the deck more consistent, I took out Emperor Thorasan, and I took out Harrison Jones, and now I guarantee get the Yogg-Saron. And, well, not guarantee. I think I've played the deck probably, you know, 3, I don't know how many times. A lot in the past 2 months. And I've lost the joust twice because it tied with C'Thun. But
wow,
other than that.
Yeah, because it's interesting because when you just have Yogg-Saron and the Elic, it's essentially like having 2 copies of Yogg-Saron to draw.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is, because that's always the downside to legendaries, is you just won't see it as often. But this time you have just as good of a chance as any other card.
Right. And the other thing that's odd is because this is a hunter deck, even though there are no minions other than those two, the King's Elic can give you some beast synergy. So you can sort of synergize with cards that without any other minions are really hard to synergize with.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of trick of the deck. And that's the thing that can sort of pull out wins when nothing else could win the game. But really, the deck is a hunter control deck based around the synergy between a bunch of secrets and Eaglehorn Bow, which is a weapon. It costs 3, and it is a 3 with 2 durability, 3 attack with 2 durability. And every time a secret is revealed, you get an extra durability. And so the idea is that you use the secrets to slow them down or to get rid of minions. At the same time, you trigger the Eaglehorn Bow, and then you hit them for 5 every turn because there won't be any creatures on the board, and you can hit them for 3 with the Eaglehorn Bow and hero power them. If that's happening, that's when the deck really, really works.
Okay, so that description right there actually makes it sound like you don't even need Yogg-Saron.
No, I wouldn't say the vast majority of the time, but probably like 80% of the time, the deck is going to win by clearing the board, whittling them down with Eaglehorn Bow and hero power, and then a giant Call of the Wild at the end. So that's the normal progression. If I'm winning
and
off
Call
the
Yogg, just to remind people, sorry.
Oh yeah, not sorry.
Call of the Wild. Yeah, do you want to explain it real fast?
Yeah, Call of the Wild is an 8 mana spell, and it gives you all 3 of the animal, the minions from Animal Companion. So you get Huffer, you get Leok, and you get what's that? The bear guy's name?
Misha.
Yeah, you get Misha. So you get what's a 4/2 with a 1 attack bonus from Leok with charge, then you get Leok, and then you get a 5/4 taunt.
And yeah, so if for 8 mana, it's a crazy good card.
Yeah, and that usually is enough to end the game, because even though the deck has no minion cards, there are a lot of minion producing spells. And so you know, it's not uncommon to have, you know, 1 Mastiff or 1 or 2 Hounds from Unleash the Hounds on the board when you do that. And then instead of just hitting them for 5, you hit them for, you know, like if you have 2 Hounds on the board, you hit them for 9.
Yeah.
So that's a good way to sort of close out the game. It's the burst damage for the deck.
I mean, it's interesting, right? Is that why you went Hunter for Yogg-Saron? Because Hunter is pretty unique, right, in having so many spells that create minions.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that this idea would work in another class because no other class has as many spells that generate minions. Like, it might work in Wild if you're running like the Unstable Portals, but in Standard, this deck is only Standard, by the way. in Standard, it's really hard to generate any sort of critical mass to kill your opponent with just spells.
Yeah. So how good are the Hunter removal spells? Are you mostly running secrets, or are you running stuff like Explosive Shot and stuff that's like direct target removal?
So one of the really annoying things about the deck was playtesting all of the shots. Like, I did not realize how many shots there were, because some of them are just never seen in tournament play.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, you know, like, look, I've got to make sure some of these aren't like insane. And so, you know, there's Arcane Shot, Deadly Shot, Power Shot, Multi-Shot, Explosive Shot.
Shots.
Yeah, it's like, oh, okay. So the dex removal is basically, you know, the two burn spells. So Kill Command and Quick Shot, but there's another shot. And then uses Deadly Shot to get rid of big stuff. And Deadly Shot is a 3-mana spell that says, you know, destroy an enemy minion at random. And the way that the deck works, hopefully what's happening between the snipe, using snipe, which is a secret that costs 2 mana and does 4 damage when a minion comes into play, using that plus explosive trap and freezing trap, they'll clear most of the little guys, and then the deadly shot will kill the big guy. If that doesn't work, my favorite combo in the deck, and this is a combo that everybody is like, I always get a legitimate non-snarky wow when you Hunter's Mark something and then you On the Hunt it. So On the Hunt is a 1-mana spell from Old Gods that does 1 damage and puts a 1/1 Mastiff into play.
Yeah, so, that card is surprisingly good.
Yeah, like, it's really good.
I really didn't think much of it at the time, but the more I've been playing it, especially with Hunter's Mark, like you said, it's really solid.
Yeah, it's awesome when they go, you know, Flame Wreath Faceless, ha ha ha, and then the next turn you go Lock and Load, and then you go Hunter's Mark, On the Hunt, and you draw 2 cards, and you have 1 mana left over.
So what is Lock and Load?
So Lock and Load was a card that was released in TGT, and it says it's a 2-mana spell, and it says whenever you cast a Hunter, or whenever you cast a spell, put a random Hunter card into your hand. And so the problem with a control deck and Hunter is that it does not have the two staple, like the 3 staples of a control deck across any card, you know, card game, is it has to be able to destroy permanents, it has to be able to gain life, and it has to be able to draw cards. And Hunter can't do the last two very well. And yeah, there's no life gain in Hunter. Tracking is semi-card draw, but that's it. Other than the neutral minions that are available to everybody, you're pretty much out of luck. And so even though it's not like straight-up card draw, the Lock and Load, if you play it right, can reload your hand. And in fact, it can give you minions, and that doesn't disrupt the Elec Yogg-Saron combo.
Oh, so it gives you any Hunter card, not Hunter spells.
Right, it gives you any Hunter card. So, like, you know, the ultimate would be, you know, that turn five play that I just described. You Lock and Load, Hunter's Mark, On the Hunt, and then one of the cards that it generates is Savannah Highmane. You have 1 mana left over. It doesn't matter. And then on turn 6, you drop Savannah Highmane, and it's like, oh my gosh, where'd that card come from?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds pretty powerful. That's pretty much, it sounds like Lock and Load is another win condition in the deck, right?
Yeah, Lock and Load can give you win conditions, and it can help you win in ways that the deck wouldn't be able to win otherwise. I mean, without Lock and Load, you basically have no card draw. You have no way to replenish your hand. And so if you get into a top decking war, you're almost certainly going to lose, because this deck is, there's a lot of synergy between the cards. You know, it violates Trump's fundamental rule about value, and that none of the cards independently have a ton of value. But Savitz's idea, which I sort of arrived at, you know, through parallel evolution by taking 100 deck apart, there's enough synergy that I think it can work. I mean, it works. I don't think this is like the world's greatest ladder deck, because it takes a long time to play. I also think that it plays in a way that is very counterintuitive to most Hearthstone decks, where you basically say, what's the best what's the best card in my hand that I can play this turn? And you play it. And this deck doesn't do that. So you really need to have cards in your hand. And if you get into a top deck war, this deck is worse than almost any other deck in the game. And that's why Lock and Load is so important, because it prevents you from...
Why do you say that you don't do the best play that you could? Or how you phrase that?
So, you know, like the Trump's idea about value and the way that people have played the game, especially when like Secret Paladin was really good, it was basically the idea of every turn you play the most expensive spell or minion that you can, so that you use all of your mana as efficiently as possible, with the understanding that all of your cards that are going in your deck are really high value cards. So like on turn two, you played Shielded Minibot. On turn three, you played Muster for Battle. On turn four, blah, 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 and so on and so forth. Yeah. In this deck, like one of the best cards in the deck is Freezing Trap, but you don't want to play Freezing Trap the turn you draw it, because they may have a card, you know, like if you're playing an Aggro Shaman deck, they may have, you know, like they cast Huskar Totemic after you play your Freezing Trap, and then you screwed yourself. Yeah. So what you've got to do is you've got to figure out the right order to play the cards, not based on which is the most powerful or which matches your mana, but which is the one that the situation calls for.
Yeah, it's interesting. You kind of need to know their deck really well to know what threats are coming and what they could be playing.
Yes, this deck is very hard to play. Like I sent you an email earlier saying that I got trapped at the bottom of the ladder because I was basically playtesting all the shots and some of them were terrible. And so I was playing
what was the worst shot you tried? Is it Power Shot?
No, I think it's Arcane Shot. I mean,
okay.
Arcane Shot worked really well with Lock and Load, but it worked really poorly with everything else. Yeah, it's either Power Shot or Arcane Shot. The one that was really good that almost made the cut was Explosive Shot. That's a really good card.
Yeah, so I've been trying kind of a cheap version of this deck for a while, and Explosive Shot really surprised me. There's just a lot of good minions with five health.
Yeah, it was good. I you know, I went Explosive Shot, and then I tried Gladiator's Longbow, and then I went back to that, and ultimately what I ended up doing was I ended up going back to the Bear Trap, which is a 2-mana secret. And when your opponent attacks you, when your opponent attacks your hero, you get a 3/3 bear. So you get an iron for a grizzly, and that gives you sort of a buffer in case they're going to send a wave of guys at you. It also gives you a creature to attack or a minion to attack them. And then it triggers all of the beast synergy for things like Kill Command, and it triggers the Eaglehorn Bow.
So yeah, man, that's just another one of those spells that gives hunters minions. There's so many.
Yes, and because it does all of those things, even though it's not the best secret, it's not the best secret in the deck, it's probably the one I would cut first. It's just, you know, like none of the other shots that didn't make the deck ended up being as valuable over the long term. It was always like the shots remind me of the gadgets on Batman's belt. It's like they're perfect for one situation. But any other situation, they're like almost useless.
Yeah.
So you don't want to, you know, like the Explosive Shot was a pain, because like there are sometimes when I was playing like a zoo deck and I would take out the Darkshire Councilman and something else, and that was awesome. But then there were times when I was like, they have like a possessed villager and, you know, like one of the tokens from the Forbidden Ritual. And it's like, I don't pay so much mana to kill two creatures. Yeah. This is terrible.
Yeah, it feels like such a waste, because you know they're going to drop something big next turn that you should have used it on too.
Yes, that, yeah. No, it just ended up, it didn't end up working out all that well.
Okay, so actually, so one thing we haven't talked about yet is Yogg-Saron himself.
Yes.
And you mentioned before the show that you've gotten more friend requests playing this deck than any other deck you've played. And I have to believe it's about Yogg-Saron, right? Can you explain how that works and some fun moments?
Okay, so Yogg-Saron is one of the four old gods, and he's the god that has the asparagus tentacles. And when you play him, the battle cry says, play a random spell for each spell you've played this game. And so one of the things that this deck does is, because it has a lot of cheap spells, it generates, you know, like, very big Yogg-Saron. Like Yogg-Saron comes down on turn 10 And usually he is accompanied by, you know, like last week I was keeping track and my average was I had 10 spells for Yogg-Saroth.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's huge. The one thing that you do have to take into consideration, unlike other decks that use Yogg-Saroth, like Jackie Chan's Druid deck and the deck that that RDU played last weekend or 2 weekends ago, the Mage deck. Those decks use Yogg-Saroth differently. They use Yogg-Saroth almost exclusively as a board flip. Like I'm losing and I'm just gonna flip the board and see what happens. Because they don't have the same spell density that this deck does. Yeah. Their Yogg-Saroths typically aren't as big. And I think that Yogg-Saroth works best as a board flip. You know, when you're losing, it pulls you out. But the more, this is obviously because it's random, it's not something I could prove, but it seems like the more spells you cast, the better the Yogg-Saroth gets. And I think
I'd kind of believe that because in general, the cards do tend to be in your favor because there are a lot of cards that don't target anything and instantly give you some boon.
Right. And the other thing is a lot of cards, a lot of spells in Hearthstone specify an enemy target. And so all of those are always good for you.
Yeah.
Like it's never going to be bad. It might not be the greatest thing in the world, but it's never going to be bad. And the weird thing is the more Yogg-Saroths you play, the more you realize that there are basically three things that are going to happen. Like something is going to get dealt damage, a minion is going to be destroyed, or somebody's going to draw cards. You know, yeah. One of those three things happens in almost every Yogg-Saroth. You know, the worst case scenario is you Yogg-Saroth and, you know, you get a bunch of really awesome minions and then Vanish gets cast and then Astral Communion gets cast and you're dead. That's terrible.
But that's pretty rare, right? How many times have you seen that happen?
I had that happen to me once, and I've seen it happen to my opponent once.
That's funny. I've never actually had that happen. I've had both those events happen, but never in that order.
Oh, it's awful. It's like, you can't do anything. You're just watching Yogg-Saroth do his thing, and you're like, this has got to be good. You play him, and then it's like, oh, that's good. Oh, that's really good. That's getting better. Oh, that's so terrible.
Yeah. The most interesting thing to me about the deck, or when you play Yogg-Saroth, so it's really fun for anyone that hasn't seen it. It's like watching a movie.
Right.
You throw them down and like the little fog comes around the edges. But it's funny because as minions drop on the board, if they have like charge, for example,
yes,
they'll keep the highlight that they can attack if they're going to survive. But if not, that highlight isn't there.
Yeah.
And so you see like, oh, I got Huffer. That's great. Wait, why doesn't he have the attack?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh no, he's doomed. He just doesn't know it yet. There's a lot of cool hints like that where you can kind of see what's coming.
Yeah, the other thing that's really funny is that there are some like really truly weird things that happen because in cards that require you to choose something like a discover card, it will choose for you. And so there will be, you know, this situation where you cast something like tracking and discover cards. You'll cast Yogg-Saroth, the card will pop up, and then something will pop into your hand that you have no idea where it came from. And you're like, oh, that's it. The best thing that I ever had happen was, I forget how it happened. I forget what spell it was, but I started the game, or I started the turn, and I was definitely going to lose the next turn. And then I ended up with a Tyrion on my side and Yogg-Saroth. And he was like, I'm done. he was at 12 and I was at 2 or something. And he was like, oh, I can't win now.
Oh, it's so good. That's what I love about it. Like, I know some people get angry at RNG in games, but Yogg-Saroth is like a perfect example of really fun RNG. Because like you said, it's going to end up in your favor most of the time, but it puts on this little movie that you get to watch. And even as like the opponent, I'm always like, ooh, this will be fun. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Because there's always the chance he's going to, you know, it's going to backfire too.
Or, you know, you'll have it draw, like you'll have it cast a sprint and you burn all four cards and you're like, oh no, that's so terrible.
Yeah.
I've been decked by Yogg-Saroth by that. It's so like, I had like 2 or 3 cards left. I cast Yogg-Saroth and, you know, like I'm going through, it's like a little sort of, emotional roller coaster. And then at the end, the emotional roller coaster goes off the tracks when it casts sprint. And decks me. And then I'm like, oh, man.
Yogg-Saroth's just trolling you there.
Yes. Yeah. The one other cool thing about the deck, and this is something that I discovered in a moment where like I'm sure everybody that plays Hearthstone has this moment where you're like, I'm going to win. Then he does something crazy. Your opponent does something crazy. And you're like, there is no way to win. So Freezing Trap is really good. It's probably the best trap. It's definitely the best trap in the deck. But people are playing really high mana minions right now because of all of the old gods, because of, you know, I saw Sagoth the Slitherer. But if they hit the Freezing Trap with like C'Thun or Sagoth the Slitherer, absent something crazy like Evianna or an Innervate, that card is gone.
Oh, because it goes over 10 mana cost.
Yeah, and they can never play it.
That's interesting. And it's in their hand taunting them constantly.
Yes. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. It's really cool when that happened. I had a guy that had a Sagoth the Slitherer, and I had used my two deadly shots. So it was basically like, I can't kill him. I will die before he kills me. Or I will be killed before I can kill his Sagoth the Slitherer.
Can you remind people what that card is?
Oh, yeah. So he's a legendary from Old Gods. He's 9 mana. He has a 5 attack and 9 health. He's a taunt. And then it says, can I be the target of spells or hero abilities? So absent Deadly Shot, which I had already burned, there's nothing I can, basically nothing I can do. Yeah. In this deck, you know, like nothing is going to kill him outright. If
yeah,
I have to kill him,
you don't have the minions to deal with it.
No. And if I have to kill him with Eagle Horn Bow, he'll kill me before I do, because he takes at least 3 hits. So it was bad. And then all of a sudden I realized, like, oh wait, I've got Freezing Trap. I played Freezing Trap. He attacked me. He bounced the Sagoth the Slitherer, bounced to his hand, and he was gone forever. Yay!
That's fun. I don't think I've ever actually seen that happen.
Yeah, I've done it twice to C'Thun and once to Sagoth the Slitherer. So the C'Thun guy was like really miffed, because he played the C'Thun and thought like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, like when you play C'Thun, you're basically like, I'm gonna cut his life in half on the battle cry, and then I'm gonna kill him the next turn. And that did not happen.
Nice. Okay, well I'm excited. So we're gonna or I guess any other parting thoughts before we head off to duel?
I, you know, like your thought about RNG is something I think about a lot. I'm teaching my son how to play Go, which has no random elements.
Oh yeah.
And I'm also teaching him how to play chess. And I feel like the fact that they were able to think of a game as elegant as Hearthstone and incorporate RNG is actually what makes it something that is distinctly different from all of the other like historically great games. And the fact that this deck has Yogg-Saron, Animal Companion, Deadly Shot. I mean, this is like as much RNG as you can squeeze into a deck. And it's really fun to play. It's not the best deck. It's definitely not the best deck. Like if you want the best deck, just go play the Aggro Shaman that runs the things from below. That's probably the best deck right now. But if you want a fun deck and a deck that is different in how it plays than almost any other deck in Hearthstone, this is a fun deck to play.
Yeah, I mean, and these are the sorts of decks that I love to feature on the show, because everyone knows about the best decks. But some people haven't tried, you know, these kind of more oddball decks.
So, I don't think it's bad. It's not a bad deck. It's yeah. just...
Hey, I've lost to it many times.
Yeah, it's fun to play, and it's different. I don't think it's like a tier one deck, but it's definitely... You can win decks. You can win against aggro shamans and decks that are, you know, tier one decks on the ladder.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to go do the duel. I highly recommend going to watch it, because I don't always say you have to go watch the duels, but any game with Yogg-Saron is worth watching just to see what happens. So I don't even know what's going to happen. I know it's going to be entertaining, though. So we're going to go do a best of 3 series. You can watch both of our sides. You're going to be live streaming, right, Tony?
I am unfortunately not going to be able to be live streaming. I could not get the thing to work on my Mac.
All right, well, you can watch it from my perspective and watch in horror as Yogg-Saron does his does his thing. That'll all be on GameDiplomat.com, and we'll be right back. All right, we are back after a pretty crazy set of 2 games. Tony! What happened, buddy? Deck went 2-0. It won.
Yeah, you know, the strange thing that happened in the first game, I had to mulligan almost my entire hand because I got 2 unleashes and 1 on the hunt. And my thought was that the dragon deck doesn't play enough of a swarm to make the unleashes useful on turn 3. And the on the hunt is not capable of killing any of your creatures without the Hunter's Mark. So I mulliganed those, hoping to get an Eagle Horn bow, and I didn't. In that game, I drew two secrets, one of which I got off the lock and load, which was the misdirection that kept me alive.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I got off the lock and load was a Desert Camel, which is terrible. It's like the worst card to get off lock and load for me.
Yeah, because there's nothing in your deck for it to put in.
Yeah, he's all lonely. But your deck has two dragon Twilight Whelps. So I was like, ah, whatever. I thought I was going to pull it off in the end because the Yogg, that was the best Yogg I think I've ever gotten. It was really good.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. It was like eight basically enemy targeted removal or damage spells in a row.
Yeah, it was really good. The Avenging Wrath, I was like, whoa, okay, I'm back in it. It's the Yogg emotional roller coaster.
I know, man, it was so tense. Every time something came up and it's like, deal 5 damage, I'm like, oh God, please don't hit my big guy. Please don't hit my big guy.
The one thing that would have been really funny is if the Starfall would have chosen the 2 damage to everything, because it would have done 2 damage to your Cro-Magus. It would have wiped the board of the 2 Twilight Whelps, and then I think the Avenging Wrath was after that, so it could have killed your entire board, but it chose to do the 5 damage to the 2/3 instead. So I was like, yeah, or the 2/2.
That's kind of like you said, it's the roller coaster, ups and downs with Yogg. You live and die by his will.
Yeah.
So I
feel like a jilted boyfriend. You know,
what?
Like, I feel like Yogg-Saron is like the really hot girl that you dated in high school that kind of just like did crazy things to like spurn you, and then at the next moment was like, you're my favorite. That's exactly what Yogg-Saron is.
But you're still hooked on Yogg-Saron.
Yeah, I know. It's what are you going to do?
So I felt like, I had a really good start in game one on the Dragon
Priest
deck. I had the same sort of start that Craig had against me when we were doing deck battles. Where it's just everything you wanted on curve, just going straight to face.
Yep.
And it felt like, I don't know, did you not have removal spells to deal with it, or were you just not drawing them?
I drew, in the first game, I only drew one secret. It was not Freezing Trap, and I could not get anything else going. I also don't think I drew an Eagle Horn Bow, and at least until the very end. So I had no way of dealing with creatures on a consistent basis, and I was basically dependent on draws. I did get 3 lock and loads, but they were not great. Like, the best card I got off lock and load was the Misdirection.
Yeah, which is not a great card overall.
No. Without a good mix between secrets and removal, like, I need to get 1 for 1, and without that, it's really hard to win. In that first game, I didn't get any secrets, and the removal I got was too little, too late.
Yeah. The Yogg-Saron did throw down a ton of removal.
Yes.
Yeah, you were at like 5 health or something at that point.
But if it would have, like I said, if it would have chosen the right one on the Starfall, I would have won, because you got down really low and I had enough on the board to push.
Yeah, that was the thing that surprised me. Even in the second game, I kind of felt like I was more in control the whole time.
Yes.
But even at one point, you played Call of the Wild, and then I forget what else you did, but suddenly I was down to like 13 health when I felt like I was at full basically the whole game. And suddenly I was like, oh wow, I need to win like next turn or else I lose.
Yeah, so that was really interesting, because that game I drew one deadly shot, and then on the second to the last turn I drew a quick shot, but I had no other removal. So you just played stuff, and I had to fight a minion battle with a deck that has only 2 minions. But
yeah,
I
drew like 10 cards off my Northshire Cleric in that.
That was brutal. She got so big and fat and I couldn't do anything about her.
Yeah.
But I thought, so I had the Call of the Wild, and if I would have drawn, if you didn't entomb and kill, you killed Huffer and you entombed Misha.
Yeah.
If you didn't have the entomb and I would have drawn any piece of removal, I would have won, because I would have had enough to push to face and then hero power and either quick shot or kill command. Or if I would have drawn the Eagle Horn Bow, but I didn't draw it. So I got bad hands. I did make a mistake in the first game. I should have killed the Shifting Shade instead of the Warm Rest Agent. But other than that, I don't think there was anything that I did that was like terribly bad.
No, yeah, definitely, like, just from my side, it felt like I guess that you weren't drawing well, because it's one of those things where, like, I know he has like three answers to this card in his deck, and I'm just waiting for it to happen, and then it doesn't.
Yeah,
and I was like, I got lucky.
I did get the on the hunt Hunter's Mark combo off with Lock and Load, but that's when I got the Desert Camo.
Oh,
I was like, so sad. Desert Camo's terrible.
So sad.
Yeah, he's terrible.
So I was really worried about leaving the little Mastiff up from on the hunt.
Yeah.
How big of a deal is it for your deck to have beasts? Because I was really worried that, like, with stuff like Kill Command and stuff, that I just had to remove beasts. Is that true?
That is definitely true. And I was really surprised when you did that, because I will tell you that on the ladder, no one kills that guy, and he always does more damage than you think. Like, I remember watching Trump videos when I first started playing Hearthstone, and he was always talking about, you know, think about not the damage that this creature does one turn, but how much damage it'll do over time. And those Mastiffs, everyone just ignores them until you cast Call of the Wild. And then he's like, he's done two or three chip damage here, and then now he's dealing two damage there, and you got five damage, maybe six damage off of him, and you removed him right away. And I was like, dang it, because he's good with Leok, he's good with Animal Companion, Call of the Wild, and Kill Command. So you got rid of him, and I was like, oh, that stinks.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that, because that was the one play that I did where I was like, I don't know if that was the right play, but the safer play.
That was definitely the right play, because I had Call of the Wild in my hand.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Phew.
So.
All right. But. So how do you feel this deck represented the strengths? Because it seems like this is probably on the lower end. You had some bad luck, right?
I think that. So I would say this. I did not play the game the first turn or the first game optimally, but I don't think that even if I did, the difference between killing the Worm Rest Agent and the Shifting Shade wouldn't have mattered. I could not get enough critical mass of secrets or Eaglehorn Bow or removal at any one time. Like, if I can't remove two creatures in one turn, which I don't think I was ever able to do in the first game, I can't win, because you're going to be able to cast, like, once you get past turn four, you're going to be able to cast more creatures than I would be able to remove if I'm only removing them one at a time. And then the second game, I literally drew, like, if you exclude the last two turns, I literally drew like no removal. So there's nothing I could do. There was one time where I could have killed the Northshire Cleric with the Eaglehorn Bow instead of gone to face, but I was trying to trick you into springing a trap, which you did, but it ended up not mattering. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
See, I wondered why you did that. I thought it was because I realized I was down to, I think, 10 cards at that point.
Yes.
And I was like, ooh, I don't think I want to draw any more cards, because I had two Azure Drakes in hand as well and a Power Word Shield. And I was like, eek, I'm going to start milling my stuff soon.
Well, what I had hoped would happen was, because I think that was at that point I had the Bear Trap. So I was trying to get you to spring the Bear Trap, take 1 point of damage. Then it would have given a counter to the Eaglehorn Bow. I would have had two taunt guys in play, and I was hoping that would stave off an attack until I could draw some removal. And I ended up with two taunt guys in play at the end of the second game, but I don't think the deck played very well. I didn't think my mistakes were mistakes that cost the deck any games. I think that the draws were really funky. I think that if we would play, instead of best 2 out of 3, if we played like best 5 out of 7 or something, it would have been more consistent. But the thing I said right before we went to break was, this deck is based on RNG, and so crazy things are going to happen.
Yeah.
So,
So that was an example. So that, I think this is a good example, if people go watch a live stream, of kind of the deck at a low point.
Yeah.
What is it like at a high point? Is the deck just, or is the board just always empty, and then suddenly you throw down Yogg-Saron and crazy stuff happens?
It's basically, the board is always empty. I'm hitting for 5 because I can Eaglehorn Bow and Hero Power. And then I kill with Kill Command. And if somehow the person comes back into it, I have Yogg-Saron to finish the game.
And
that's,
Yogg-Saron is more the safety net.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. No, he's never the kill. You never cast him. The only time I've ever cast him if I'm ahead is where it's clear that the next turn tempo is going to swing way to his side. So that would be one instance. But most of the time, the deck kills with, you know, 5 chip damage from the bow and the Hero Power, and then a big burst with Call of the Wild.
Okay.
So I think that the one thing that I would say has to work against the deck is if you're playing a deck that has card draw and healing, you need to get really lucky in terms of the cards you draw and the order in which you get to play the cards, because you got so many cards off your Northshire Cleric, and then there were, you cast Circle of Healing. I think you cast it 3 times in 2 games, and it was like,
yeah.
And one time you cast, you got 2 cards, you healed up all your dudes, and I was just like, oh, this is not good. And it's it's why a Hunter control deck is really hard to play.
Yeah. I mean, when you describe it that way, this deck actually seems like a pretty good counter deck to yours. This deck is almost all heals and guard draw.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because, you know, like the only, I couldn't remove any of your creatures outright, because like if you think about it, so Quickshot could remove your Cleric and your Twilight Drake, as could all the other removal. But once you get beyond those two creatures, every card in your deck requires at least one removal or good luck in terms of Deadly Shot and yeah. the two combos, the Kill Command with a beast or the Hunter's Mark and On the Hunt. And so it's just your creatures all have four power, which makes it really hard, because it's 3 from Kill Command without the combo, 3 from Quickshot without any help, and 3 from Eaglehorn Bow, which takes care of most cards. I mean, like, I play this deck on the ladder and I play Zoo, and it does much better than what it did against your deck.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, because that was the interesting tweak to this deck that Craig did, where it's a lot of kind of more early minions and then a lot of taunt with big fat bodies.
Yeah,
that are just hard to get through.
Yep. Those Twilight Guardians are awesome.
Yeah,
crazy. They're really good.
All right, so just to remind people, actually, so Craig's Dragon Priest deck has beat 2 challengers now. So that means on the next deck battle, he'll be fighting to get into the Hall of Fame.
Sweet.
So I'm sorry your deck didn't do well. Like, it was one of those games where I felt a little bad winning, because you can just tell that your opponent just isn't having a good luck. And you still take the win. You're still happy to win, but it's just not as fun, you know?
Yeah, it was fun to watch, try to figure out, like, is there any way that Yogg-Saron could win this game? And it came really close the first game.
Yeah.
And the second game, I didn't even draw him, so it didn't really matter. You yeah, did, however...
I will say, that playing the Yogg-Saron in game 1... that was so tense and so fun just to sit there and be like, oh, what's the next card going to be? Oh, what's the next card? Because like you said, our health totals were so close at that point that any swing in the other way would have just been enough to lose the game. And oh, it's so fun.
Yeah, it's a great card. It's really, really a great card.
So any other parting thoughts on the deck before we move into the community segment?
I think that... So have you seen Vicious Syndicate? Do you know what that website is?
No.
Okay, so Vicious Syndicate is a pro Hearthstone team that uses data, like they really heavy into data, and they have a program that you can download and put on your computer, and it will do data mining for Vicious Syndicate. And then every week they gather all that data and they do sort of like a Tempo Storm metagame report, but it's based on actual data. And they had a version of Yoggenload that was really, really tweaked. My deck is sort of designed to be consistent and easy to play. The deck that they had was really, really tweaked, and it was, I've tried it and it's tuned really well, and it beats a lot of things in the meta, but it just gets wiped by a bunch of other things. So if you're looking to find a way to get this deck better, go to Vicious Syndicate, look at their metagame report. It was last week's, and it had it listed as one of the Hunter decks to try out as like a meta breaker deck.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm looking through their data now. This is super interesting. I'll put links to this in the show notes. This is really cool.
It's amazing. And then when they do the thing like the breakdown of like the percentage of each deck type, you know, like you could see Pirate Warrior, Control Warrior, C'Thun Warrior, Tempo Warrior, Dragon Warrior. It's incredible.
Yeah, this is really cool. Man. Oh, they have like fancy charts, line charts and stuff you can look.
Yeah.
This is really cool. Yeah, definitely check this out. Highly recommended. All right, let's jump into the community section. We got a couple questions. First from Steve. This is from our Google Plus group. Thank you, Craig, one of our moderators who helped get this all set up. He said, Steve says, there is not enough emotes. Which emotes are missing from Hearthstone? What do you think, Tody?
Because this is a PJ podcast, I don't think I can recommend any emotes.
I understand. You could do it like kind of classic old timey cartoons where it just shows a bunch of symbols and.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That would work.
Like a black rain cloud bouncing around looking angry.
I always wanted one that was like, that somehow conveyed in very few words, I forgot to hit the end turn button.
Yeah, because you say sorry, but it doesn't, and I mean, you can't even really say sorry anymore.
Yeah, and sometimes when you'd say sorry, people thought it was like ironic sorry, and then they would like rage emote you, and you're like, no, yeah. I really meant sorry.
I really did. I'm not a jerk, I swear. Yeah, along with that, like, I wish there was one to say like, hey, you forgot to press the end turn button. Now all you can do is just spam greetings, but that comes off kind of passive aggressive too.
The new emote does not have enough of the when you want to express when somebody gets like fabulously lucky.
Yeah.
It's sort of like underwhelming when like, if I would have killed you in that first game on Yogg-Saron, that would have been total baloney because you've definitely outplayed me. And so if I would have won on that, you would need that like wow emote to be like, yeah, great job, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, so how about this? Maybe we just need the emotes to have a clearly sarcastic version and a clearly genuine version. Because I would also want a version that is like, legitimately, that was awesome. That was a cool combo. Way to go. But yeah. Like, and then if it had one of those, it's like, I swear I'm being serious. Then another one is just like, yeah, good job, buddy. Then it would be so much easier to understand these emotes. And I'd be so much happier. At least you know, because sometimes when people do it and you aren't sure if they're being a jerk, like I still kind of get upset anyways.
Yeah. Like if it was like your hero portrait changed to have like a sarcastic look on his face.
There you go. Oh, yeah. What you can do. How about this? You should be able to set your mood and then that modifies the emotes. So you can set your mood to like happy, angry, sarcastic, bitter. Right. And then based on that, it changes what the wow emote does or what the sorry emote does or what the hello emote does.
So like the sarcastic one, your hero would have like his arms crossed.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Whatever, buddy.
Yeah. Maybe even some sweet sunglasses on. That'd be awesome. All right. Another question in from Troy says, what is the incentive to continue playing Tavern Brawl past the first game? Shouldn't there be more incentives? Maybe like 10 gold after every victory, maybe a pack every 10 wins instead of just the one pack you get for the first win. What do you think?
You know, I think that it depends on the Tavern Brawl, because the Tavern Brawl where it was the two cards in your whole deck and that was it.
Yeah.
I would sit like when I was, you know, waiting for a case to get called in court, I would sit and try to figure out like the best combos. And like the one that I came up right away was the Iron Sensei and what's the Annoyatron.
Yeah.
I think a bunch of people found that one. But the other one that I found that was really awesome was the Forgotten Torch and the Ice Block.
That is brutal.
Oh, that one I played that one more than I played Constructed while it was available. But then there are other ones like the one where you're on the same team that it's just like so clunky and you want to be done with it. So I think it's really a function of how good the Tavern Brawl is. But if they gave you a little bit of incentive, like 10 gold's probably not enough because you could just play Constructive. But if they gave you an incentive where you could get like a special gold card if you played 20 games or something, or if they implemented like, a leaderboard. I don't even think they'd have to give you any prizes. If they had like a leaderboard I would definitely play more.
Oh, yeah. Especially if it was like among your friends too.
Oh, yeah.
Like a lot of leaderboards I've seen in game are like regional. So it's like in your city or something like that. Yeah. That would be so cool to see like, oh, I'm the number one person in San Diego at this Tavern Brawl.
That would be really fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree though. I don't want to give too much because there are some that are just a grind that you're just happy to get one win and get out.
Get your pack, get done.
Yeah. I do have to say, my favorite combo in that Tavern Brawl, because I love that one, was Mind Blast and Power Word Glory. The only deck that I lost to, actually, was the Lost Torch Ice Block.
Yeah, that deck was crazy. The other one that was really good was Upgrade and Bash.
Yeah.
Raynad mentioned that on his Twitter, and I was like, and I went and played it. I was like, I cannot lose.
That's crazy. I actually wouldn't have guessed that, but I guess Upgrade just keeps upgrading itself and gets out of control.
Yeah, because like what would happen is like you get like your third upgrade, and then you have a three whatever, and your bashes are taking stuff out and giving you armor, so you could use your upgrade to kill creatures, and it was really good.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Wow.
I love that Tavern Brawl.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about iTunes reviews, because I got a nice note from Raccoon Dad, which is an amazing name, by the way. he has obviously a real name, but I can't remember what it was. I just go with Raccoon Dads. And I'm trying to figure this out. Maybe. What do you think, Tony? Do you think this is a dad that owns a raccoon? Do you think it is a raccoon? Or do you think it's a dad that is a father to raccoons?
I think it's an actual raccoon, because they have fingers that are skillful enough to type.
Yeah, that's true. Sitting there on their little phones playing Hearthstone. Sure. I believe it. All right. So somewhere, I believe right now, there's a raccoon dumpster diving with earbuds in listening to our podcast.
Yep.
So shout out to Raccoon Dad. So he made a mention, he's from France, that he had left a review on the French iTunes store. And you have to look in every region individually. So I haven't done it in a while. I did a pass through all the major regions and collected a bunch of reviews that I've missed. So I'm going to read all these out. So there's like six, more than usual, so bear with me here. TX Border says, happy, happy. We're starting with USA. He says, Josh and his assortment of guest hosts can always be counted on to uplift your spirits and your Hearthstone knowledge level. The atmosphere is casual and enjoyable, and one I always look forward to returning to. The card set reviews are great. The deck battles are great. The potluck episodes are great. It's all great. Keep up the awesome work. So thank you, TX Border. Chomps Lover 32, ooh, lover of chomps, says, super dope, love the positivity of the show and the laid-back Hearthstone chat. Makes me feel like I'm just talking about the game with friends. Highly recommend. Chomps Lover, we are friends. We're best friends. I'll call you later. From Canada, Gwyn Andrade says, love the deck battle and have found most of the card review information helpful. Keep up the good work, Josh. From the UK, AV hops in and says, great show, happy host, great mix of topics recently. Guests need to improve their singing. This was clearly written before Craig a couple episodes ago, because I got like 10 messages on Twitter, email, comments on the blog about how much everyone loved Craig's rap. It was amazing. So AV says, how about a top tier deck type review now and then? Like Reno Lock and how it has changed and will change in the future. So that's an interesting idea. Like taking a deck that's really strong in the meta and just kind of breaking down why it works, and how it might work in the future. I mean, that's kind of what the deck battles are, but we're definitely more off meta in the deck battles. I don't know. What do you think about that idea, Tony?
Well, you guys did that. You and Scott did an explanation of Handlock when I first started playing. Like, I've only played probably 10 months, and when you guys, when I first started listening, you and Scott explained how Handlock worked, and not only did it prompt me to spend a lot of money to get all the cards for Handlock, but
hey, this is a safe area. Everyone listening, we know.
Yeah, so I did that, and I got the deck, and it really taught me a lot about how the balance for hero powers works. Like, coming from Magic, there's nothing like a hero power. And so I did not realize how it aided in building decks. And so you guys breaking down the Handlock was awesome. It was really, really helpful.
Okay, cool. So how about this? Because actually, if we don't do the Arena episode next, we'll do it the one after. So either the next non-deck battle episode or the one after that, we'll do one of these. So if you have a deck you want us to break down that you think is interesting, lots of things to talk about, explains, you know, core concepts like that, send a message. Leave a message on the blog or on Twitter. Let me know what deck you want us to do, and I'll find someone that knows the deck really well, and we can take it apart. So, yeah, that's really cool. I totally forgot that we had done that. Wow.
It was super helpful.
Awesome.
Well, yeah, you could have somebody explain Aggro Shaman, which is cast cards that are cheaper than they should be, punch face. Done.
And then make bitter comments about it afterwards.
Yes.
That's step three, right? Yeah. Dude, I hear that. All right, last two reviews. Australia, Thrakish says, my favorite Hearthstone podcast. The host has a great attitude and brings in new guest hosts each week. Then finally, from France, the raccoon that kicked it all off, Raccoon Dad, says, unique attitude. Great podcast with a very unique approach. Perfect for new players. Josh reminds me the stats and the text of the cards and doesn't just assume you know them all of them by heart. And actually, this comment is why I made sure in this episode to make sure that every time we mentioned cards, we were talking about the stats. Because I get that from a lot of people that they really appreciate us doing that. Raccoon adds, but also interesting for more experienced ones. Très bien. Thank you, Raccoon Dad. No donations this month, but we do have a Dust Bowl, thanks to Jake, who sent us in 7 packs, as he does every month, and he's awesome. We got some decent cards, no legendaries this time, but we did get an epic or two. What card are you going to save out of this bunch, Tony?
Oh, well, if you don't have this card, you've got to save Doomhammer, because that card is just insane.
So it's I only have one copy. I think, do you run 2 copies in a deck?
In my aggro shaman deck, like, so what I did was when they made the 18 slots, I made the 9 best decks for each class based on Vicious Syndicate, Tempo Storm, and Hearthheads meta report. And then I have 9 slots where I experiment with 1 deck in each class.
Oh, cool.
And so in the completely teched out, like, perfect list of the aggro shaman that I have, it has 2 Doomhammers, and that card is insane. It's significantly more powerful than cards that they nerfed. I think it probably should have been nerfed. I would imagine that in the next round of nerfs, it gets nerfed. It's just busted.
Yeah, there's just so many combos. We talked about this on the show a bit too. When they talked about the nerfs, they talked about nerfing cards that kind of prevent them from designing other cards. Like, they used the Starving Buzzard as an example, as one of their first nerfs, because it prevented them from doing cards that gave you a lot of beasts. But Doomhammer is kind of that way, right? You can't have cards that are buffing weapons. You just can't have neutral cards that do that, right?
Right. And if you look at, like, all the cards that have come out, basically every card except for the cards that were in the original set, are there any shaman cards that buff weapons? I don't think there are. And I think because Doomhammer is too good.
The Rockbiter.
Right. Other than Rockbiter, anything after the original set, I don't think there is. I mean, it's a space that's completely gone in terms of designing new shaman cards.
Yeah, which is interesting because shaman is kind of a weapon class, but there's not much to do there now.
The other thing is, like, there, you know, like, a lot of people thought they were going to nerf Tyrion because Tyrion is so clearly better than any of the other legendaries in any of the legendaries or Aatrops in Paladin. But there is literally no reason to play another weapon in shaman. Like, I've seen people that play the cheaper one, the storm, whatever, I don't even know its name.
Turns your hero power to deal 2 damage.
No, it's the one that's like it has overload. It's like a 2/3 with overload. Yeah, but they only play that because they don't have Doomhammer. But if you have Doomhammer, if you own that card, it means that there are no other shaman weapons that are worth playing.
That's a bold statement.
It's really good. It's really, really good.
Okay. All right, so I have 1 copy. I'll toss my second one in there. I haven't built the aggro shaman deck because it feels dirty.
It is dirty.
Maybe I should just try it. All right, the card I'm going to save is Doomguard because that's just one of my favorite cards. I've used that in basically every warlock deck I've ever made. It's just a fun finisher. He's the 5/7 with charge. Tosses 2 cards out of your hand when he comes into play. But there's usually ways around it, or you're playing it on the turn you're going to win and you don't care anyways.
Or you have no cards in your hand.
Yeah, which is,
and you can draw because it's warlock.
Yeah,
yeah, he's awesome. He's really, really good.
All right, so cards I would dust out of this. I mean, there was a golden Alarmobot. Yeah, the effect was kind of cool. Like, it gets the sirens, but Alarmobot is such garbage. And since it's golden, I can turn it into any other rare in the game for free by dusting. I'll just happily do that.
Yes. If I can't dust the Alarmobot because you've already gotten to it, although I did see a really awesome ramp druid deck that played Alarmobot and only big fatties, and it was fun, but it was always like a lot of work to get going. Yeah. And so, like, I played a guy on the ladder and then I friended him, and it was just like, it was one of those cards, like, if it got going, it was like spectacular, but it never did.
Yeah. There's just, how do you, there's so many ways to kill an O3 in the game. Like, you just have to get lucky that, oh, they happen to not draw any of the cards that could deal with that.
Yes.
All right, so what are you testing?
The card I would take, and I forget the gentleman's name, but he introduced me to the beauties of Patron Warrior. You had him right. You had him on. It was the second episode I listened to. He did the mech patron deck, and he had Commanding Shout in his deck. And because I was brand new and I was still trying to figure it out, and coming over from Magic, if a card has draw a card on it in Magic, it's almost always worth looking at. Yeah. But in Hearthstone, that's not true, because Commanding Shout is terrible. It is the very definition of a win more card. Like, even in the mech warrior deck that he had built, it never like gave you a win where you wouldn't win. It only ensured that you were going to win a game that you were like 95% going to win anyway. And the card has no impact on the board. You have to have creatures in play. You have to be able to leverage the fact that you're going to damage your creatures. And then you have to have some way in which all of those things happen at the same time. And even though there are a lot of self-damaging effects in Warrior, you know, most of them are better spent on cards that are independently good. Like, if you have Ravaging Ghoul and you play Commanding Shout to save one of your creatures, it would be better to just play Ravaging Ghoul and Acolyte of Pain, because you can attack and you still get the card draw effect. It's just a terrible card.
All right, so if it said your minions were immune this turn, so that they didn't always end at one health,
that would be different.
Okay, would you like that card enough to play it?
It would be a good. I think it would be a playable card. It would not be an unplayable card. I just don't know which warrior template or which warrior style deck would play it right now. Like, it wouldn't work in Pirate Warrior because you're just going to face. You don't care if they die. It would not necessarily work in Tempo Warrior, because a lot of the things that make Tempo Warrior work require a minion to be damaged, like Bloodhoof Brave and Acolyte of Pain. So I think it would be a better card, but I don't think it would see more play, because the way that warrior decks are set up right now make that effect very hard to use, because you want to damage your own minions to trigger all of their, you know, enrage effects and other effects. But at the same time, I just don't think it would be play. It would be playable, but it wouldn't be played, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, because a lot of times there are good cards that just don't fit into a deck. And so it's just maybe in the future in Wild or something, they'll find a place. All right. Interesting, because I kind of like Commanding Shout. It's always that card that, like, I want to put in my deck, but it never makes the cut because there's just better options.
Yeah.
But I want to believe it's a good card, but I'll let you dust it. I'll let you dust it. All right, let's talk about our card of the week.
All right.
Are you ready?
Oh, yes. I've been practicing. I had written two different songs. One for Yogg-Saron, because I love Yogg-Saron. Like I said, it's the hot girl in high school that gives you the time of day. But I decided, based on your advice that we would talk about Yogg-Saron a lot, to skip it and go with a different card. So, are you ready?
I am so ready.
All right. Wait a second. Hold on. It protects, on offense, it protects you, turns your hero totally blue. Hit a minion or a foe, it's Gladiator Longbow.
That's pretty good, but you forgot to say the words card of the week, dude.
Oh, it's the card of the... I totally screwed up.
Just toss it on right now at the end. It's good.
Gladiator Longbow, card of the week.
Perfect. All right. The card of the wild.
You had a lot of rap on, so I wanted to do like a crooning kind of Frank Sinatra tune. And Gladiator Longbow is a card that I tested in the Yoggenlo deck a lot. And it was probably the one that would make the cut if I took something out. And the reason why is because it is quasi, I don't want to say this, but it's quasi healing effect in Warrior, because it eliminates a creature and it's still, and you don't take any damage. So if I was going to rejigger the deck and put in a second weapon, it would be Gladiator Longbow. Also, the art from Peter Lee is amazing. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's like the Gladiator's Longbow is like on fire. It looks so cool.
Yeah, and the angle that he took, like there was a million ways to do that. And a lot of like the really cool cards in the game, the art is from like a pretty conventional angle. Like if you look at Animal Companion, it's really great art, but it's just, you know, sort of a 2D perspective. This one is sort of like up and above the hunter, so you can see him, you can see his face, and you can see the bow on fire. And though I hate gold cards and I always dust them no matter what they are, the gold card version of Gladiator Longbow has really awesome effects.
Nice. So did you keep that one or did you dust that one?
Dusted. I just, you know, it's hard for me to justify not dusting a card when I can go. Because like, I just want to be able to play the deck and I don't care what it looks like. And, you know, it was the same way in Magic because they have foils in Magic. Just get rid of them. Play
the deck. That's what I was about to ask, because man, the foils in Magic is what got me kind of hooked on the shinies. It just feels good when you throw it down.
Yeah, you know, like I remember when there were certain cards in Magic that like they would hype before the set came out, and everybody wanted to have them. And if you drew a foil, it was like, okay, I'm going to trade my foil for four playable non foils, and my deck is done. So,
all right, let's talk about the card more. So it's a 7 cost, 5/2. Your hero is immune while attacking. So my first thought when I look at it is 10 damage for 7 mana. It's actually pretty bad as far as weapons go, right?
Yeah.
Because the standard is basically 2x base value.
Right.
And that's why cards like Fiery War Axe, which is 6 for 2, are so incredibly good because it breaks that mold. But immune obviously is really high value when you're attacking things. So that's what makes up for it?
Well, so here's the way that I think of it. So Gore Howl is a weapon in Warrior. It's a 7 cost weapon, and it's a 7/1. But if you don't attack the hero, it takes one away from the power instead of durability. And basically, that's a way of them using design to incentivize attacking minions. Yeah. And Gladiator Longbow does the same thing. Like, you can punch face, but punching face for, you know, 10 over 2 turns for the cost of 7 mana is terrible. Whereas eliminating 2/5 attack or 5 health, infinite power or infinite attack creatures, that's a much better deal. You know, like you can eliminate, you know, like get your Godzilla or whatever it's called up to as much as you want. As long as it has 5, then you can just take it out. And with Hunter's Mark, you can take out anything regardless of its power or regardless of its attack or its health with Gladiator Longbow.
Yeah, it's interesting because one of the things you mentioned earlier in the show is that hunters have no healing. But this is almost like a quasi form of healing, right? If you have to, if you know you have to remove a threat on the board, this is the same as removing it and then healing for whatever their attack was.
Right, and that's why it was good in the deck. The reason why I didn't ultimately keep it in is because at 7 mana, it was always, you know, like if I drew that and then in my opening hand, it was terrible. But if the deck was working according to plan, I would draw the Eaglehorn Bow and then get a bunch of durability counters from secrets. And then I draw it on turn 7 and I'd sit there and I'd have like, you know, a 3/5 Eaglehorn Bow. And it's like, I don't really want to get rid of that.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the reason why I ultimately cut it. But it was one of those cards that just beckons you to design a deck around because it does a really unique thing. And you know, like in Warrior, where they have better control cards, Gore Howl is a one of in a lot of control Warrior decks because it's unbelievable creature removal. And I think that Gladiator Longbow is not quite as good, but it's pretty darn close.
Yeah, and the cool thing about it too is it's very unexpected.
Yes,
people will play around it never expecting you to have this card because it's pretty rare that I've seen it. And so it lets you really surprise them and take what they thought was a good play for them and turn it into a bad play for them.
Yep. And you know, like there are very few cards that are played before turn 7 that see regular play in the meta that have health over 5. So like you're looking at basically Druid of the Claw and, you know, like a, the Dark Arakoa and maybe a couple other things, you know, Flame Wreath Faceless. But other than those, you're going to wipe out pretty much any creature played before turn seven.
Yeah, totally. All right, any other thoughts on it before we close out the show?
No.
All right, so as always, you can find show notes, the videos of our live stream, and the full guide to Tony's deck on GameDiplomat.com. Check it out there, and let us know what deck you want us to kind of dissect in a future episode. And if you'd like the show, we'd love for you to leave a review on iTunes or just, you know, give us a little shout-out on Google+. We're Happy Hearthstone. On Twitter, I'm at JAugustine. And email, ajosh@outlook.com. Oh, booyah, I got a new email this week. Are you ready for it?
Yes.
TheHappyHearthstone@gmail.com. We did it. We have an email account.
Perfect.
So it's not my account. There's now an official. So you can email TheHappyHearthstone@gmail.com or leave a comment on the blog, GameDiplomat.com. And if you enjoyed the show, you can consider supporting us. You can find more info at GameDiplomat.com/donate. And if you like what you heard about the Game Diplomat podcast, talking about indie games and smaller games that are really fun that you might have missed, you can find that on GameDiplomat.com as well. Episode 1 and Episode 2 will be coming out next week. We'll be talking about Party Hard, and that's a fun stealth puzzle sort of game. It's themed after like a cheesy 90s slasher movie where you're the villain. So it's a little dark humor, but they keep it super goofy. There's zombies and dancing bears and like Lamborghinis and all sorts of really just goofy stuff that keeps it lighthearted, even though the premise is kind of dark. It's super fun. It's a great stealth puzzle game. So we'll be talking about that next week on the show. So hopefully you'll join us there. And where can people find you, Tony?
So I run a website devoted to everyday carry gear called everydaycommentary.com. And I run a podcast on everyday carry gear, knives, flashlights, pens, wallets, anything you put on your person. It's called Gear Geeks Live. You can find it in the iTunes store. But a word of warning, it is really explicit. Lots and lots of profanity and bad and dirty jokes. And then you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. The Twitter handle is Everyday Comment and the Instagram handle is Everyday Commentary. If you have any questions about Hearthstone, I'd be happy to answer them. I don't think I know very much because I'm relatively new. I've never played any other Blizzard game, so I think I'm probably not the person to go to for lore either. But the last thing I wanted to say, Josh, is I don't think that you understand how good the podcast is. Like, not only are the production values really good, but I listen to a lot of Hearthstone podcasts, and a lot of them devolve into like gossipy bores about like the pro scene and like what pros did and how they're like cheating on their team, and it's just awful. It's like, I want to talk about Hearthstone, I want to talk about the cards. Like, I could care less, you know, like who's leaving this team and what the suspicions are as to why. And, you know, like coming to Happy Hearthstone, I know that I'm going to get a talk about the cards. I know that I'm going to get somebody to explain the cards to me if I forgot what they are, or I don't know what they are. And I also know that there's going to be no boring gossip. So,
well, thanks, Tony. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I really try and keep us focused, because originally the show is about learning too and just getting better at the game. So we really try and focus on the game and the cards. And we ramble a little up front, especially with, you know, reasons why we're happy, which Raccoon Dad mentioned that was actually one part of the show he didn't like. Raccoons don't like to be happy.
Yeah, they're always surly. If you've ever tried to chase that raccoon out of your garbage can, they're never happy.
Pretty much just hissed and clawed at me in my entire history with them. But there are adorable videos of them online. So good. My favorite one, they come in through the pet door at night. And they get freaked out, so they start backing out, but their claws are hooked on the welcome mat. And they eventually just steal the welcome mat because they can't get off. Great.
Man.
Thanks for the kind words, Tony. Thanks for coming on the show. It's been really fun having you on.
This was super awesome. Thanks, Josh.
Yeah. And thanks again for everyone listening, for visiting the Happy Hearthstone and having a little fun with us. We'll see you next time.